Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and this is the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants Monthly Podcast Interview. On this program, we feature a variety of attorneys and experts in many areas of health law, litigation, and the regulation of healthcare professionals. Today, our title is Appealing Adverse Final Rulings in Healthcare Discipline, Discharge, and Termination. Today's interview is with attorney Michael Cohen, and he focuses his work working with attorney Michael Favia in defending healthcare professionals and appealing adverse decisions from any state agency's final ruling affecting and involving discipline, discharge, and terminations. There are many compelling reasons to file an appeal of a ruling affecting your healthcare career. Attorneys Cohen and Favia work as a team to fight for the professionals being disciplined or terminated. Now, some of the topics we'll cover on our 30-minute conversation this afternoon will identify some common elements in reportable healthcare discipline, discharge, and termination cases. Essentially, what happens and how we lead to the process in the first place. We'll also describe some usual procedural processes that lead to those final and appealable rulings and decisions. I will also talk about the measurable impact of a healthcare discipline or termination on a local and national level as that applies to this healthcare professional. Also, we'll talk about what people can expect in appealing adverse discipline, discharge, or termination rulings. Again, I'm here with attorney Michael B. Cohen. He's a partner of the Chicago office of Quinterios, Prieto, Wood, and Boyer, better known as QPWB. Mr. Cohen represents clients in a wide variety of civil and criminal litigation matters, both state and federal, at the trial and appellate levels, focused on not only healthcare, but he's focused on commercial and complex litigation with the practice including the areas of appellate law, bankruptcy, civil rights, commercial, constitutional, criminal, employment, estates and trusts, insurance coverage, medical malpractice defense, personal injury actions, privacy law, professional liability, and real estate. So within those areas, it's kind of a wide base there, but they're all really elements of those practice areas that sort of dovetail each other. Of course, this is, by way of disclaimer, this is a general information program, and any advice on this show does not constitute legal advice. Any communication with the guests on our show does not give rise to attorney-client relationships. If you do have specific questions about any of the content on today's program, please feel free to call the Illinois Professional Licensing Consultants and make an appointment to speak to an attorney by dialing area code 773-631-4580. Again, that's 773-631-4580. All rights to this broadcast are reserved. And it is time to say hello to our guest, Michael Cohen.
Well, hi, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here today talking with you and telling some people about the good work we do here at Quinterios, Prieto, Wood, and Boyer.
All right. Well, what I'd like to jump right into, and I'm just going to make this as a general statement and ask you to respond to it. As a general statement, I've heard people say, there are too many times that our healthcare professionals handle disputes, terminations, and issues on their own. There are too many times that a lot of healthcare professionals believe that I'm a doctor, I've made it this far, I can handle all these things, I can respond to it all, I can handle this. And too many times people not represented by attorneys in some of these areas may fall short in the process. So I'm going to ask you to address that, but first tell us a little bit about your practice and how you came to do work with Mike Favia, who is of counsel to your law firm.
Well, that's right. I have been litigating for about a decade. My job is to go into courts and advocate for clients, whether it be doctors or other professionals, to make sure that they get a fair hearing and that they receive the due process to which they're entitled. And I work closely with Mike Favia, who is one of the most knowledgeable people that I know in litigating and protecting doctors before the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation and the Medical Licensing Board. And to address your question, just as a doctor, a doctor wouldn't want me practicing medicine on myself as an attorney. And I certainly wouldn't advocate any doctor or other medical professional attempting to handle any of these cases or disciplinary issues that they might have by themselves. Mike Favia and myself specialize in making sure that medical professionals are afforded the best representation when confronted with professional regulation issues. We make sure that they that the rules are used in their favor, and that the factors that would be relevant to their particular situation would be presented in a way that would be most favorable to the outcome that they desire, which is to mitigate any of possible repercussions to their professional reputation and license. Mike Favia generally handles the practice before the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. I would come in if there is an adverse ruling before the Medical Practice Board, or if before there's any proceedings instituted against a medical professional, negotiating with an employer in an attempt to nip any problems in the bud before they ever get to a disciplinary board.
Now that's interesting. Tell me more about that. Where the describe to us. I mean, assume that I'm a doctor or a nurse or healthcare professional, and either my contract's not being renewed, or I'm being terminated, or someone is investigating me, or even suggests that I've done something wrong, and I fear that I might be terminated. So I suppose in that aspect, the regulatory agency has not yet become involved. How do these cases come to you in your lap, or do they come through Mike, or do they come directly to your firm? Tell us a little more about that.
Well, many times disciplinary issues are the result of internal procedures at either a hospital or a medical practice, or even a school, a medical school. And frequently, perhaps a professor, a colleague makes a complaint against a medical professional, and the medical professional then has the opportunity to avail themselves of internal grievance procedures before anything ever gets to a state agency. And the purpose of those internal procedures are to, at the first instance, to provide the professional with due process and to allow them to explain to their employer or their school or whoever it may be that the complaint against them is unfounded, and that can be that's the first line of defense, and that's really when you want to contact somebody like Mike Favia or myself, so we can take a look at what exactly the charges being levied against you are, and by charges I mean frequently just a complaint, and determine what the best way to present your defense is, and what possible resolutions might be internally. And frequently there would be perhaps a written presentation that could be provided to your employer laying out exactly why it is, why the complaint levied against you is unfounded. And sometimes it ends there. The employer might make a decision that this complaint against the doctor or a nurse or whoever it might be is not going to go any farther. And even if there is an adverse decision by your employer through with whatever their internal processes might be, which are frequently spelled out in a handbook, you're frequently afforded the right to an appeal internally, and perhaps even several appeals. Throughout those appeals, at each level, you have an opportunity to change their minds. And of course, you should afford yourself of each one of those opportunities, and you should do so with the help of a professional.
Now let's assume I'm thinking about, I like to use examples and illustrative things to kind of grab people's attention. So I'm thinking about the show House, where Dr. House had ongoing challenges with, I forget what pills he was using, but they were painkillers. So let's say they went to, and I forget the name of the doctor who, I forget her name, but the one who is the hospital administrator, the one who is responsible for, you know, procedures. So let's say, you know, they have a complaint and they're going to refuse to, you know, they're going to discipline or something like that. How does, and say we say, okay, the bylaw, not the hospital bylaws, but the employee handbook or contract that the doctors have at the hospital may say all of this information is going to be, you know, kept private and kept internal. I'd wonder how internal some of that stuff really would be, or whether that would be something that would be discoverable in the future. So let's say there was an instance and it was all handled internally, and that's sealed and done. Say something else happens and there's a death of a patient downstream and there are people making similar allegations to what happened in the past. I would just wonder how readily that information might be obtained and later used against someone. I just sort of figure your permanent record, wherever it may be, is going to continue on with you, especially where all these agencies are really working in the interest of the people of the state and protecting them, and ensuring that the healthcare professionals are working above board, properly licensed, and practicing at a requisite level of care.
And certainly you're right that that's something that a health practitioner always has to be cognizant of. Number one, that other healthcare professionals and their employer do at some point have a duty to report if they believe that there is something going on that requires them to do so. Under the Medical Practice Act. And you always have to expect that whatever it is that you're going to be putting in writing may be discoverable in a proceeding. If there is a circumstance where there is a lawsuit down the road, you have to expect that whatever records there might be regarding your employment may be discoverable to an opposing party. For that reason as well, it is important to have a lawyer on your side when you're presenting your case internally. But that being said, there is a way to present information in a way that protects you but also advocates for you. Again, that's another reason why it's very important to get a lawyer involved at the outset of a problem, if only in a consultancy role. Frequently, we might meet with a healthcare professional and speak with them regarding their situation and determine whether this is something that you need a lawyer for. Perhaps it's something that you might be able to write a letter yourself about with our support and input. Other times, it's more appropriate for attorneys to get involved from the outset. It all depends upon the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'd like to make a suggestion that oftentimes when information is received by a state agency, they have a duty to follow up on it. I see that similar, and I'm not saying that is the case across board with every agency in every situation, but I see a similarity with Child Protective Service groups and organizations who have a mandatory duty to follow up, even with the most people might say the most ridiculous complaints. It's just because there's a complaint, they have to follow up. So I think there's a situation where I think a lot of healthcare physicians might have to realize that the individuals who are asking me these questions have a duty to ask the questions, even though it's going to be an unfounded event, and there's really not too much reason to worry. And I think of this also in terms of the recent increase in what we've seen in Medicare billing and fraud and reporting, where people involved in the administration of healthcare, whistleblowers, receive compensation when cases are settled and civil fines are levied against individuals. So there seems to be more reporting of other people here and there, and the person making the report might not really even know what they're talking about, and might be completely off base.
And that's very true. Many professions, including the medical profession, and indeed the legal profession, require practitioners to report their colleagues if they have reason to know that somebody's doing something they shouldn't do. And that reporting is mandated. You can get in trouble for not reporting. So many times people err on the side of reporting. And in those circumstances, the person being reported may have to rebut innuendo, may have to rebut reports, as you said, that are entirely unfounded. And it's important, though, from the outset to make sure that the rebuttal is fulsome. And that's to say, rebut not only what's the innuendo, but anything that could follow from the innuendo. And it's important to have an attorney to investigate the allegations against you and things that might flow from those allegations, some things that a healthcare professional might not even think of. To get to your original point about House, I believe, by the way, if I remember correctly, it's been a couple years since I've seen House. I believe it was Dr. Cuddy that was the boss.
Yes, there we go. I was going to say Scully, and I was like, no, Dr. Cuddy, that's right.
Scully's X-Files.
Right.
But yeah,
I guess the relationships were both kind of spicy, though.
very much so. But House it presents a good example of a professional with a substance problem. And if a colleague of yours, of a healthcare professional or a lawyer for these purposes, knows that you have a substance abuse problem, they, under certain circumstances, are required to report. And your employer will take action. But you can, with a lawyer, you can talk to your employer and perhaps get yourself in a treatment program before it's reported. So there's already sort of a package that's presented when the underlying action is reported to the state, such that would mitigate any repercussions. And that's something, sort of a global strategy that we frequently engage in when we're contacted by medical professionals that run into these problems. Other problems that frequently result in reporting include gross negligence. There's sometimes allegations that medical professionals are engaged in negligence, and their employers is required to, or their coworkers are required to report them. Of course, convictions, criminal convictions, that automatically results in reporting. And something a little more nebulous is what's phrased as dishonorable, unethical, or professional or unprofessional conduct of a character likely to deceive, defraud, or harm the public. That can be something that has nothing to do with your medical practice. It can be something in your personal life, your financial transactions with your family. These are things that can impact your ability to practice medicine.
It's very scary stuff, you know, for a lot of folks, especially when, you know, I remember in law school, they always taught us about the attorneys having the, you know, problems with drugs and alcohol and report yourself. Yet, I don't know any lawyers who ever self-reported. I saw people receive discipline. And I see, you know, a lot of times when people have, you know, problems with substances, they're likely to be in a state of denial on all levels. And to try to handle something like that with an absolute response of, I'm fine, there's no problem, leave me alone, The person is, you know, to not enter with a sense of humility and a sense of contrition, whether that's warranted or not, you know, is a case-by-case basis. But the value that, you know, I've gotten to know Mike Fabia. We went to John Marshall together, not at the same time, but I've been working for him and talking about his practice for several years now. And, you know, what I've learned is because Mike was on the side, you know, he worked as chief counsel, chief of prosecutions at IDFPR when it formerly was just known as the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation, IDPR. That, you know, is sort of the same thing as someone who's been a prosecutor and then works in criminal defense. When you've been on both sides of prosecuting and evaluating and defending cases, you have an idea, a really solid idea of what the state agency is trying to do. They're just trying to do their job. It's not a witch hunt. They are documenting their file. I mean, I know that every suggestion of discipline could be a terrible thing. One of the reasons, and I want to talk about appeals in a second, but one of the reasons I want to stress that it is so important to have cases like this taken care of properly are the multi-state levels. Even if you're a professional, whether a doctor or a nurse working in Illinois, maybe you're also licensed in Indiana, you could have a medical malpractice case where you settle something in Illinois and you are fine with IDFPR and the state medical boards. However, the people in Indiana aren't so fine with it because they have a whole different system. They might flag you. You may not have discipline in Indiana. That could cause, I don't know what could happen then in Illinois. They could potentially, that could be used, you know, again. And if sometime down the future that the doctor wants to, you know, move to another state, these things kind of follow you. So there's the National Practitioner Data Bank has all the different states. So, you know, where it may seem a good idea to you settle a medical malpractice case and thinking you're getting a win by settling it, sometimes it is much more in your best interest to fight your medical malpractice case. But again, how you do that and how you proceed may also, I mean, it's all these things have, you know, definite, permanent, and long-term consequences, including within healthcare, the ability to have authority for hospital privileges, prescription writing. There are so many different privileges and things along the area, along the way that could be negatively impacted. And again, it's the same saying as having your, being your own attorney, you're your own worst client. You know, so we've seen doctors who have handled some of these things okay on their own, but definitely not something that's advisable. But now I'd like to shift, Mike, if we could, to talking about appeals. So let's say we have our final ruling in the hospital setting. Maybe it's one of the state boards. Maybe it's the IDFPR. And there's a discipline and a final ruling. Why do we want to appeal? What's involved in that appeal? And what should people expect? And let's say there's a doctor who handled it all on their own, and they did it, and they got an adverse ruling. What are their options, and what are the next steps?
Well, once you do have a final administrative decision, and in the case, for instance, of the Medical Practice Act, that would be by the – if it's not final until the director of the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation issues their ruling. Under Illinois' administrative review law, you have 35 days after the decision is received by the target of the decision to file an appeal. And that appeal would be, or file a complaint for review of the decision. And that complaint would be filed in the circuit court of where I sit in Chicago, where my office is. It would be the circuit court of Cook County. And you'd file it in the Chancery Division, which has the power to reverse the decision. Or mandate that certain things be reheard. And what you can expect is to file the complaint, serve the department or whatever administrative body is issuing the decision. And the power of the circuit court extends to all questions of law and questions of fact that were presented to the administrative department, but here's the key. They can't consider anything that was not presented at the administrative level. So that's why you need to make sure when you're in front of an ALJ or a hearing officer that you put into evidence everything that you can. And it's tough to do that by yourself. It's better to have a lawyer to make sure that you get everything in that you might need to, just in case it doesn't go your way and you have to file for review in the circuit court. Frequently, people don't put in, doctors don't put in evidence in mitigation. They focus on, I didn't do it, I didn't commit negligence, and they don't put in evidence of why perhaps, you know, not only during, when you're asking for review of decisions, you can ask not just for the review of whether you were, for instance, found to be grossly negligent, but also what the remedy for that is. If your license is revoked for a period of years, you can get a circuit court to say that's far too severe. But in order to have the circuit court review the director's decision, you have to present the circuit court with sufficient evidence. You can't go to the circuit court and say, well, the board did not consider something that I didn't put in there. You can tie your own hands, and that's really to be avoided. The circuit court reviews questions of fact that are decided by the administrative body under a manifest weight of the evidence standard. And that means they take a look at all the evidence that was presented and decide, was the decision fair? Chancery courts are courts of equity, so they're governed by fairness. And there's a lot of arguments that can be made regarding whether the decision that was ultimately made was, number one, supported by the evidence, and number two, was fair. And those are the margins where we as lawyers work in. The other thing that you can take a look at is whether the director or whatever administrative body, the ALJ, who's deciding these issues, applied the law correctly. And that's something that you absolutely need a lawyer for. It's very difficult for somebody who's not a lawyer not only to have to access to the databases that you need to determine what the law is. All of us have studied for years determining what the law is. And it's frequently can be a little more difficult than you might think to figure out what the law in a given subject is. And a lot of this stuff is very esoteric and requires I spend hours of time, as Mike Favia does, I'm sure, researching the state of the law. There's decisions coming out constantly interpreting laws, and you can use these decisions to your benefit. But of course, if you don't know about them, you can't use them. So
what happens if you lose in circuit court? I mean, now you have a chance. Now the appellate, you know, now we're into more appeals and the, you know, where you say there's sometimes nebulous areas where it's unsettled, or there's not a clear viewpoint, or there's countervailing viewpoints. Here's an opportunity to make some law.
Absolutely, absolutely. The first step in the review process is the circuit court, and if the circuit court rules against you, you can appeal it to the appellate court. And the appellate court is going to take a look at what the trial court, the circuit court, has ruled. And so there's multiple steps, just like there are internally, to make sure that you're afforded due process, that you get to make every argument you think you can as to why you shouldn't be disciplined. And to do that effectively, you really do need a lawyer. There's really – it's very difficult – and I've actually, I have not seen a medical professional attempt to seek review of a administrative body in the circuit court by themselves. It is not a great idea.
Not a great idea, no. So, you know, those out there who may say, well, I'm going to wing it at the, you know, the local level in my own hospital administration. If I, you know, I'm going to wing it with the ALJ and then I'm going, well, I'll hire a lawyer. If I don't win, then we'll appeal this thing. But again, you're not, you know, the record is what the record is. And if you haven't established a record with certain information and facts and evidence, you know, it's not always, you know, what people may think it's an issue of first review, and that's, it's just not the case. So, you know, your final bit of advice to any healthcare professional who, you know, when should they contact a lawyer?
As soon as possible. The first sign of a problem, sometimes it's even before a internal complaint is levied against them. Maybe they suspect that somebody, a colleague, or their employer is going to issue a complaint against them. Contact a lawyer. And perhaps the earlier the better, so you can get out in front of this and start formulating a plan and taking affirmative action that'll mitigate the possible repercussions for you.
You know, another thing that I always suggest, which is, I mean, I know that healthcare professionals are very limited in time and dealing with administrative nightmares, but I've always made the suggestion that it is a good idea to have someone who works in regulation and licensing, a lawyer like yourself or Mike Favia, do some sort of audit of the practice and have a look at how medications are being controlled, how electronic medical records are being managed, who's doing what hand knows what the other is doing, just sort of preventative maintenance. You know, do we have a malpractice policy that we're following? Has everyone read their malpractice policy? Do doctors take the time to do that, or is it the hospital administrations? How often do we see that?
Well, you know, doing that type of due diligence and being proactive in that fashion is something that every medical professional should consider. If you have somebody like Mike Favia or myself doing periodic reviews of your practice and making sure that everything, you're crossing your T's and dotting your I's, it's unlikely you're going to ever have a problem. But few medical professionals have foresight like that. But it certainly is something that you could do and be very proactive about. And if you have the wherewithal to do it and you have the foresight to do it, I highly recommend it.
Right. I mean, not only could that be something that could work in your favor downstream if there ever were a complaint or a problem, but it helps the professional and their administration staff stay up on the trends and the issues and the things that are going wrong. And that's something that we write about a lot on Mike Favia's social media and the website and the blogs. Ways to be proactive and spot where problems are happening with medications, how the people doing the bad things are doing them. You know, because you never know. You could be a doctor who does everything. You stay up at night trying to make sure everything is above board. You could have one bad egg in your hospital administration who does something, and you're ultimately responsible for a lot of things. So it's always good to be a little bit paranoid, like we say, and just be prepared and know that bad things can happen. The same reason we buy insurance for so many other things, because we just never know when bad things happen to good people. And when bad things happen to good doctors, we hope that they reach out and get a good lawyer. Any final thoughts, Mike, and some contact information where people can get a hold of you?
Yes, well, here at Kuteras Prieto Wooden Boyer, along with Mike Favia, work tirelessly for medical professionals to make sure that they are covered when bad things happen. And we're here anytime to offer our services. And you can reach us at 312-566-0040. And you can check us out at qpwblaw.com. And Nick, I want to say it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you and discussing how medical professionals can better protect themselves in the state of Illinois.
Absolutely. Well, Michael Cohen, thank you so much for your time in coming on this program. And I want to also send a note to all those who may listen to this podcast as they find it in a newsletter or on social media, LinkedIn, etc. It's always a good idea to share information like this because we never know who out there in our networks is looking for exactly this, or we know a doctor or nurse or someone who thinks that something may be going wrong somewhere. You know, it's always good, even if you're a nurse who thinks that there's a situation that's not above par, good to ask someone like Mike Favier or Mike Cohen before just going and reporting something. But of course, if you have duties to report, these are always, again, it's always good to talk to someone before jumping right to the middle of the pool. You know, get in from the sides and have someone take you in that direction, right? So another phone number for Michael V. Favier & Associates, area code 773-631-4580. We will be back next month with another program, so keep a lookout. And Mike, I want to thank you again for your time.
Thanks a lot, Nick.
All right. See everyone next month. Of course, a telephone number again for Mike Favier & Associates, 773-631-4580. Mike Cohen, your number there at QPWB again?
Is 312-566-0040.
All right. Everyone be well to each other. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye now.